You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.
Today on our show, we're talking with Lisette Alvarez. Lisette, thanks so much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Let's talk about what you're doing now. What are the productions or projects that you're currently working on?
Well, I just wanted to preface the conversation by saying that I work in a collective that's name is Sin Cabeza Productions, or Without a Head, Headless Productions. And the reason that I emphasize that is because part of our practice is based on really kind of questioning where one body begins and the other ends, and on really rethinking artistic practice from a symbiotic perspective, or also what we call sympoiesis. So the idea that you're always working in collaboration with someone else, whether that be another person that you work with, or a range of different agents in the world, from, you know, the materials that you encounter in your daily life to like your companion species, which in our case is our dog, Matsya. So that's the beginning of saying that when we work together, you know, it's we're really trying to push the way that we're conceiving of even the artist and what their practice is supposed to be about, and where the artist, you know, is located. Who is the artist? You know, who constructs the ideas, and from where do these ideas come from, and how do we make them matter in terms of how we process our engagement in the world? Now, in terms of more concrete projects, we're working currently right now very strongly on the idea of, you know, what does it mean to make art in the context of the sixth great extinction, and also, you know, what's currently being called the Anthropocene. So our work is all really very much in response to that problematic.
I'm sorry, say that problematic again. In you said the great extinction and...
The sixth great extinction and the context of the Anthropocene. So the sixth great extinction, which is the term that's currently floating around. It's based on a study where basically the investigators are saying that from a very modest perspective, and, you know, this is, they're saying that so that we become, in a sense, more worried, we're actually entering a period of extreme extinction, you know, mass extinction. And the belief is that it's not necessarily without the impact of the human species, of Homo sapiens sapiens. So the idea that our impact upon the Earth is so great that now we're going to be living a new wave of extinctions, of mass extinctions, in our lifetime, and in lifetimes that are beyond ours as well. So we're responding to that urgency, to the urgency of, you know, ecological anxiety, disaster, apocalypse, and, you know, how to make things a little bit better for not only humans, but for a lot of different living entities on the Earth.
And when you talk about the current mass extinction, this is of all different kinds of species of animals, or as well as ourselves. What does the mass extinction entail?
Definitely one of the interesting things about the sixth great extinction is that it is very possible that, you know, we're high up on the list of species that might go extinct sooner rather than later. So yeah, I mean, there's definitely all sorts of things that are going extinct, from plants, animal, you know, to who, you know, I'm guessing that includes as well different types of, you know, bacteria and viruses. But I think that the anxiety that a lot of people are feeling is based on the impact that it's going to have on the way that we live life as we know it as in humans, and also on the type of biodiversity that's going to be available within the near future, and how that's going to change the way that we relate to the Earth. So, you know, we don't really know what's going to happen. You know, there was a great article recently in New York Times that was talking about how, you know, one of the problems we have is we don't really know, you know, the way of recording mass extinction is much more possible today, in a sense, for us than it was generations ago. So we don't know how many mass extinctions there are that we haven't necessarily recorded. Obviously, then there's, you know, different different professions which allow you to record extinction from, you know, for example, geologists. Geologists can tell you about, you know, the way that the mineral deposits in our Earth are changing, et cetera, depending on the discipline that you're in. But in any case, the point is that we're at a crucial moment, right? There's a lot of changes going on. We see a lot of, we kind of see a return of a lot of themes that seem to have been prescient in the 80s and that are now becoming prescient again for new generations. So whereas in the 80s it was the belief that we were going to enter some type of nuclear holocaust, today, even though the threat of nuclear holocaust continues to exist, now it seems that capitalism and its, you know, breakneck pace of exploitation of Earth's resources is what's making us believe that maybe our extinction is even closer than we had expected. So it's, you know, how are we affecting the way that different species availability on the Earth is, including our own, is available. So in terms of the work that we're doing to,
that was, I was gonna
to respond to that, I mean, so a big part of this, is research, right? You know, it's like you can't really talk about what's going on Earth and about how to create an art practice that responds to that without doing research. And so one big part of our work as artists or as activists or both is to do research and to, you know, kind of work with specific scenarios and cases. In our case, we've been working with, you know, so-called wildlife for the past 3 years. So we've been working, for example, with hedgehogs from Germany. We worked with Indian pariah dogs in the south of India. For almost a year, we were working with their rehabilitation. In 2 years ago, we began working with an organization called Wildlife Freedom that works with orphaned wildlife from the East Coast. So squirrels, we've had a litter of squirrels that we took care of, and now we're watching over a litter of raccoons. So,
and explain to me how that works exactly. So when you're engaged in working with those animals, what does that mean exactly in terms of your actions, but also the final product?
Well, you know, I would say that basically the action is to try to make sure that these animals survive, so that they don't die. And the way that we've helped, you know, these different animals is dependent on the context. In the first case, the hedgehog from Germany, it was just an orphaned hedgehog we found outside of our artist residency. It wasn't a planned project. It was just an unexpected encounter with another being. But we felt like we had to intervene because people's response to this wandering hedgehog was, oh, it's just natural. The mother will come back and take care of her. And, you know, our role is not to intervene inside of this because we're separate from nature. That just seems to be the generalized tendency. So our work, you know, seeks to kind of bridge those types of assumptions about what our role is in nature. And we work with this metaplasm of what nature culture is, the idea that we're not separate from nature, but that we're a participant in nature and culture is part of nature. So that means, you know, taking decisive action to intervene. It doesn't mean that you're going to do the right thing or that you're not going to make mistakes, but it does mean saying, you know, that this is not just a natural process and we have to step back and kind of pretend like we're not part of this entire scene that's playing out, but, you know, really questioning what is to be our role. So in the case of that hedgehog, you know, our role was to do internet research and figure out what to give the hedgehog in the meantime and figure out if we were supposed to, take her in, and we decided that that was our responsibility. We looked for wildlife rehabilitators that specialized in hedgehogs, but we didn't find any that were located in the city we were in, so we kind of ended up taking on the labor ourselves. And for 4 days, we had really 4 wonderful days of living with this hedgehog and of, you know, feeding it and, you know, trying to get it strong enough so that we could eventually, you know, give the hedgehog over back to the wild. But on the 4th day, she entered hibernation and she hadn't collected enough fat storage deposits, so she actually died in her sleep. So it was this, you know, really sad experience and very touching experience, and it was a very unexpected experience. We were in residency at Documenta 13, and we were there to present our research on, you know, multi-species, on building multi-species communities. And it was like we had this unexpected encounter with this hedgehog that was nowhere on our agenda. And it was a very
amazing
experience.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but let me just stop you for a moment, because I want you to tell me more about that. But this is now, we're talking about Documenta 13 and what you were presenting there. Is that correct?
That's right.
Or that's about what you're about to tell us. Okay, so go on, please.
So we were at Documenta 13. We were invited by Carolyn Christoph Bakarchiev, who is the artistic director, and under the recommendation of artistic agent Donna Haraway, who's a feminist theorist, and who I have had the pleasure of working with at History of Consciousness, which is where I'm finishing my doctoral degree.
And what was her name, the theorist? I didn't catch that.
Donna Haraway.
Thank you. Okay, so go on.
Sure, no problem. And so one of the interesting things about Documenta 13 is it was really challenging this anthropocentric supremacy. You know, so they were trying to bring together a group of committed practitioners who were interested in rethinking the way that we engage with the world around us and from a feminist perspective. And so our work was incorporated into this wing of Documenta's research. And they invited us to participate with a collection of 5 videos, experimental videos, and a performative lecture. And so in the performative lecture, we introduced people to the type of video work that we make. And we also did live performance as part of the lecture. So we work with theory, performance art, video, experimental video, filmmaking, non-traditional filmmaking, and with, you know, unique relationships that we build with people and creatures across the world. And,
so let's walk through that lecture a little bit and tell us what were the kind of videos you showed, and if you can, if we can make it, do a synopsis of that. What were people seeing in the videos, and what was the performance about?
Sure. Well, there was 2 videos that we made specifically for the archive where we were invited to present. So there were videos that we included that were like historical works we've done, and then there were 2 that were specially commissioned for the archive. The archive itself was called The Worldly House, an archive inspired by the multi-species writings of Donna Haraway on coevolution. That's a mouthful. And the intention of the archive was to curate artists who were working with multi-species relationalities. And in the case, in our case, we made 2 videos, experimental documentaries, anthrozoology. That's kind of like an ethnographic approach to multi-species relationalities. And the first video was, it's called Art Farm Revisited. And it's about 30 minutes, and it's an expose on my partner's experience tattooing pigs on Wim Delbois' art farm project. And so the video itself is it shows behind-the-scenes footage of the pigs getting tattooed and what happened at the end of the year when this artist project began to gain currency in the art world, and when he needed the skins to display in exhibition sites. So he slaughtered the pigs to get the tattooed skins and to be able to exhibit them. So the video is very much about that entire experience, about the ethical implications of working on it and of And for my partner, who was one of the people who was doing the tattoos, the experience that he built between the pigs during his residency on the farm in China. So it's a video that is it has a post-colonial construction. So it's thinking about the asymmetrical relationship between first world European artists who are part of the capitalist art market and who do very well in that market, and the relationship to, you know, the art laborer, you know, who brings the skill but doesn't have necessarily the same type of cultural capital, in this case my husband, but also the two women that he worked with in China, Ms. Moon and another Liang Jie, which was one of the tattoo artists who was on the project there. So this was a kind of like an expose video, and it was, you know, basically what you would never see if you were only to see the tattooed pigskins exhibited, you know, in these very fancy galleries. So we were showing what actually happened during that year and types of ethical problematics that arose during that project. So I would go and visit my partner when he lived on the farm in China, and my partner was also one of the primary documentarians based on his diary of living there. So it's like a visual diary of his life on art farm. And we worked with, he was the co-director because, you know, the scenes were very traumatic to return to. So we worked with Roberto Mesa, who's a video artist, experimental video artist, who's living in Colorado today. And he was the one who helped us kind of bring the narrative together of this, of all of this documentation that we had. So that was one video, and the second video...
And wait a minute, before you go on to the second video, let me just ask you a question. And in that first video, just to be clear about what's happening, when the pigs are being tattooed, is that part of a farming practice, or was that, and was that like a tattoo of your partner's own design? How did that actually happen? Why tattoo pigs? What is that about?
Okay, so the project of tattooing pigs is not neither mine nor my partner's. That was... The concept belongs to an artist called Wynne Delvoye, D-E-L-V-O-Y-E, and his project is called Art Farm. That's what he called it. And it consists of tattooing pigs. He did it in Russia, in Europe, and in China. And so what he set up in China, I don't know as much about the other projects, but in China he set up a farm where these pigs were held over the course of a year. And he hired tattoo artists to tattoo them with different designs, primarily designs that are used in tattoo culture. So the point, what he explained to us at the beginning of the project, was that he wanted to save the pigs from the slaughterhouse by turning them into art. That was what he said. But he was never present on the farm for the entire year. He only arrived at the farm at the end of the year. So he never really saw, like, he knew what was going on because he had, you know, a manager who was part of the project. He had us sending him emails, etc. But he was actually, he was kind of more like the, you know, like when you have a carnival show, he's like the person who goes and like sells the carnival show. But he wasn't actually really there for the
right.
for the leading.
So he didn't know what was happening. But mm-hmm. I would think this was actually a painful process for the pigs, isn't it, getting tattooed?
It was. It was a painful practice. You know, the pigs, they have weak hearts, so they can't undergo that much anesthesia, which was one of the issues that we had from the very beginning. The other issue was that the people who were hired to do the well-being of the pigs were not really trained veterinarians. They were farm workers, Chinese farm workers. And the level of care for the pigs on the farm in general in China is very different from American standards. Although you could say that any pig in a slaughterhouse does not necessarily have the best of lives. So in a sense, the pigs were not slaughterhouse pigs because they were not living inside of a slaughterhouse for the year that they were part of this project. But the payment that they had to make for not, you know, living inside the slaughterhouses, they had to undergo a different type of pain which was a tattoo pain, right?
But they also did get slaughtered in the end, didn't they?
They did get slaughtered in the end, which was, you know, it was the deal breaker in many ways, because the whole point of having them undergo this, you know, this difficult, painful process was the idea that they, you know, they would eventually have a full life.
They would be free.
Right? They would live their lives. They would be free.
But what do you mean by the deal breaker? In what sense was it a deal breaker for you working with, or how is that a deal breaker?
Because it was, you know, the whole ethical premise upon which the project was founded was that they would undergo this discomfort to be able to become a new type of, to make possible a different type of relationship with the pigs, right? So the idea was that by honoring them with the status of arts, they would somehow, you know, become these extraordinary subjects that were adored and that had a good life, right? So, you know, they would, for example, like every time people would come to see them, they were, you know, it's like, oh my gosh, you know, like, look how beautiful these pigs. There is this one pig, for example, his name, Cheto named him Niño Bonito, beautiful boy. And it was, you know, the pig that my partner, he spent the most amount of time on one tattoo. And what was interesting about this one pig is that my partner always said that he knew he had the most beautiful artwork on his skin. It was like he was the most admired, and he was very spoiled, and he was very affectionate. And it was like he enjoyed the affection that he would get from being this, you know, very special, unique, made into an individual rather than just kind of like a food product, right? So, I mean, those are precisely the questions that we have. And, you know, there's a lot to be said and there's a lot to be criticized about the project of Art Farm. I don't encourage any artist to tattoo any other animal for vanity, which is what I think this project was about in the end. But for the people who were working on the project, like, for example, my partner, I think that, you know, one of the things that might be overlooked by just, you know, for example, the animal activist who's like, this project has no reason for being and, you know, nothing positive can be said. I think that they're also missing something, which is about what type of relationship gets built, you know, over the course of time and even in a situation where, you know, there is an asymmetrical relationship there. You know, obviously the tattoo artist is not undergoing the same type of pain, but there's a sharing of pain. And especially in the practice of tattoo, which is a very, tattoo is a cultural practice that brings communities together usually for some type of, you know, as a community. So it's something that, you know, makes you part of a community. So how did the pigs, for example, create community with the tattooist? That's something that isn't part of Art Farm. It's not interesting to the artist itself. But it's something that happens. And so this video is about precisely, you know, kind of teasing out those uncomfortable relationships and at the same time emphasizing that there are relationships that were built.
I see, and so the final deal breaker, as you were saying, was that it didn't happen. But by deal breaker, do you mean that was a part of the project you didn't agree with? I'm still trying to define what you mean by deal breaker in this context.
If my partner had known from the very beginning that the pigs at the end would be slaughtered so that their skins could be exhibited, and with that intention, he would have never undergone the project. You know, like for him, it was a process. You know, the project was process-based, but that kind of agreement, that contract that existed, or that we were made to believe that would exist, was broken the moment that the pigs did become slaughterhouse subjects again. So it was like, okay, it was an understanding, okay? It's like, okay, it's kind of like, okay, if you eat organic pork, you buy organic pork because you assume that the pig is going to have a better life than one of the industrial slaughterhouse pigs, right? So, but then you find out at the end that when you bought this, this organic pork, it's actually not really organic, and the pig was tortured its whole life, and all the things that you thought you were buying into are not actually as they were sold to you. So that's what I mean. I mean that there was an ethical contract that was broken.
Right.
For both the pigs and for the artists who participated in the project. I think each person has a different evaluation of how that ethics affected them. I don't think it was the same for everybody who participated. Because I think, for example, for some of the other tattooists, it didn't, you know, the pigs, in the end, if they got slaughtered or not, it wasn't as important to them because they might have been in it for a different reason, right? I can only speak to the participation that we had in the project because we had a different reason for being part of that project, no? So, I mean, it's a very complex scenario and case, and the video is very difficult to watch because you do see these, you know, pigs screaming as they get tattooed or as, you know, they get anesthetized. And then, you know, you see the very graphic removal of the skins. And then, you know, whereas if you're just a usual art audience, all you would see is the skin inside a gallery space, you know, anesthetized or very, clean compared to the entire production of it. So,
right.
You know, in that sense, we were trying to reveal the commodity chain of how something transforms from, you know, active or live entity to commodity.
Well, and it is also an activist stance in itself, isn't it? Kind of revealing not only, you know, this project and the many issues it raised and that you and your partner are presenting, but also the broken contract, the cruelty, the
yes,
the deception.
Yes, exactly. No, and I mean, I think also one of our surprises at this venue in Documenta 13 was that, you know, here we were being invited to this archive that's supposed to be about rethinking the relationship between species, right? How do we affect each other as species and build different types of, you know, communication modes? One of the surprises that we had was that the same artist that we were critiquing, Wim Delvoye, actually was also included in the archive. So there was that surprise. It was kind of like his video was supposed to be shown alongside, you know, in the same archive as ours. And so that was an interesting curatorial decision from Tua Green for it.
But the artist that tattooed the pigs was, who was that?
One of the artists who tattooed the pigs, there's many, but one of the artists that actually did the tattooing is my partner, Cheto Castellano.
Right, and the artist who essentially asked other tattoo artists to commission the pigs, that was the one who actually...
That was Wim Delvoye, and he's one of the artists who was also curated into this archive where we were presenting at Documents 13.
I see.
So during the presentation, when you asked about the performative presentation, so we introduced kind of like a synopsis of that video, and then my partner, at the same time, while I was introducing the work and the history and the ethics and the contract, etc., he was doing actions during my lecture. So, for example, one of the things that he did was he was filling a piggy bank, you know, one of these ceramic piggy banks, and then at the moment when we show, you know, the artist who's responsible for all this speaking and talking about commodity, the pig as a commodity, as a growing commodity, my partner shattered he broke the piggy bank. So, you know, we were working with those same themes in terms of the actions that were undergoing. Another time, you know, one of the things that we did during this performance is that my partner was shirtless, and so he started cutting his chest with a razor, with a sharp blade. And so the idea there was to show that for him it was also a traumatic process, the idea of sharing pain and sharing trauma, you know, that it wasn't something that only was experienced by the pig, but that was also something that was shared by the workers on the farm. So it was a very powerful performance because it included this very fleshy material realm that was, you know, speaking directly to the theme of what is, you know, what is the ethics involved in how we build relationships with other species.
That's really interesting. And so that's how was that received there?
There was clapping. There was definitely clapping. I think a lot of people were just stunned. You know, the sight of blood, the sight of those scenes that had never been seen. We were a little bit
right. It sounds horrific. It sounds horrific to me. Like that.
At the same time, it was very emotive. You know, like the way that I think you would have to see our work to really understand. You know, that's not just. It's not just about producing like shock in our audience, but about really working through the affect. So, you know, the entire, like I said, we made two videos that were specifically for that archive. The second video is about street dogs in Chile and how they survive, and so how they depend on humans for survival as well. You know, so there's like this symbiotic relationship between the street dogs and urban society. So in a sense, what we were trying to present was this diptych, you know, like this, they're related works in the sense that we're the same artists working, right, with these problematics. But we were trying to pose, you know, like, so we, you know, there's this big mistake, right? There's this big, we made a mistake in working with these artists, right? And we were questioning why you make the mistake, you know, why do you choose to work with somebody who has, you know, cultural capital, you know, and like, what are the ethical implications that you become involved in when you make those decisions? And, you know, how does being invited to participate in contemporary, in the discourse of contemporary art produce a desire that's also, you know, comes with its own ethical baggage, right? But then we have a second video, which is more of a hopeful side of our practice as artists. So, you know, it's like you have this one side, which in a sense, a lot of people would never want to reveal because, you know, it's the questioning of our ethics in terms of why did you even think that tattooing pigs to begin with was a good idea, right? That's a legitimate question. But then the second video is about, you know, okay, we learn from this experience. We try to make a work that's critical with everything that's leading up to that experience, right, or that comes after that experience. But then how do you continue making work from a different agency? And so that's what Kiltra was about. Kiltra was about showing where, you know, that experience could lead us to a different type of agency. So in that sense, it was both a very traumatic presentation and it was a hopeful one. And the entire presentation that we gave was also like one of the undertones was this intense empathy that you develop between different bodies, right? Mm. And so in that sense, I think it was hopeful because it gave people, I think there's nothing more strong you can work with as an artist, an affect, than with the feelings that you produce. And so I would say that that's one of our primary mediums is really working with affect, with the feelings that we produce in our audience.
And in closing, what is the next thing that's going to be happening? Or is there a show upcoming or anything you want to point the audience to? Or
sure.
Or
well, we have a documentary that is a reflection on our residency at Documenta. Originally, it was called Blinded by the White. So it has to do with, intense racial interpolations on the exhibition path, as well as in Germany. So sort of the continued importance of paying attention to tensions with xenophobia and racial tensions in Germany. At the same time, we're also very critical of the type of white fragility that is so consistent amongst people who work in the cultural sphere. So the idea of decolonizing the art culture system. So our documentary, I really suggest those of you who are interested in trying to track us down, we can give you a password. We still haven't had a U.S. premiere. I'm hoping it'll be sometime in the fall. We premiered this documentary of our, our work tends to be kind of like these exposés and really are self-conscious in the sense that we really interrogate what it means to be an artist and all the kinds of things that you have to deal with when you're mediating between cultural spaces and curators and things like that. And so this documentary is interesting. I think it's very emotive. You get introduced to the hedgehog that I started off with. You get introduced to the projects that we brought to Documenta, and you get introduced to also, what happens on the exhibition trail and some of the interesting people that you meet along the way, and not only people, but other creatures. And apart from that, we're working on multi-species architecture and design. So the idea that the world that we live in is primarily directed because of an anthropocentric viewpoint. So the idea that, the homes that we build are primarily thinking of a type of normative human experience. So what happens when you start to queer that? And what happens when you start thinking about, not only an architecture made for humans, but an architecture made for multi-species communities? And that's the work that we're really pushing right now. And, we hope to see it somewhere public soon.
Lisette, thanks so much for talking to us today. I really enjoyed talking with you.
No problem.
You're listening to Yale Radio WIBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.